I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Today on First Lady and Friends, we had a great conversation with my new friends from Emerald Hills Institute. They are in the time of Ramadan. They are fasting for this whole month, and they talked to me about their experiences as kids in school, telling people and explaining about their culture and why they do these things. It was a really fun conversation. I can't wait for you to take a listen. Let's get proximate. Welcome to this episode of First Lady and Friends. This is a really exciting episode. We've got quite a room full here of friends I just met and friends that I was introduced to. I have to go back. I have to say that when I first started in this position as First Lady, my most rewarding experiences have come when I get to know somebody that has a different story than me, when I get proximate to somebody that has a different experience. And this is a room full of people that I'm so excited to get proximate to hear your stories. I think it's something unique that most Utahns have maybe not heard of your experiences. And so I'm so excited and so honored that you all would be here with me today. We're going to go around our little studio, our table here today and have them introduce themselves. We'll start with Julia. Do you want to introduce yourself? And then we'll kind of go around and have our amazing young people in the room invite them to introduce themselves as well.
My name is Julia Kablan, and I work as an instructional coach at Kenyon School District, and I volunteer at Emerald Hills Institute as an education coordinator, and I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you.
I'm Zaina Altawalba, and I'm a senior in high school.
I'm Zainab Oz, and I'm in fifth grade, and I like reading.
My name is Noor Zametle, and I'm in eighth grade, and I do judo.
I'm Nishet Kablan. I'm in ninth grade, and I like playing soccer and chess.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And I love that you told me a little bit about you, too. So tell us, maybe Julia, start by just talking about your background, where you grew up, what brought you here to Utah, and then maybe we'll talk about some of the experiences that you're having with Emerald Hills.
I was born in Turkey, and I grew up there. I got married, and then I went to college there. And me and my husband, when we finished our master's degree, we decided to go for a doctorate degree, PhD. And then we applied, and then we got rejections. And then we said, maybe we should just like settle down, you know, get a resident and then apply to colleges. And then so we came here. We had a friend here, living here. And then he said, this is a wonderful place to live in, to raise kids. And then the geography is exactly the same of my hometown. And then we came to Utah in 2007. And I started working as a teacher, and my husband as well. And we had two more kids over here. In total, I have three boys. And then I was working at a charter school. And then I moved to Kenyon School District. And I started volunteering at Emerald Hills Institute. And so I love the opportunities to serve to the community and to raise kids to be better citizens. And they are, we want them to be proud of their own identity. So that's why we started organizing events for our youth. And then you have some of our friends over here. So I'm invited you for our iftar dinner. So iftar dinner is a part of Ramadan. And we said, you know, since Emerald Hills Institute was founded by educators, so we should honor educators. Mm-hmm. And Ramadan is a time to just to be aware of our gifts and be thankful. And we said, you know, it would be better to be thankful, to show our gratitude to the teachers, to the educators. So we invited all the educators, and with your background, so we said, why don't we invite our first lady? And we invited you, and then we had connection.
Yeah, so I think this is so interesting. I think people, I would love, maybe Zaina, will you talk a little bit about Ramadan? I think there's a lot of us that maybe have heard of Ramadan, but maybe don't understand exactly what it is and the importance of it to you.
Yeah. So although Ramadan is a month of fasting, it's also a holy day that brings us closer to God and gives us time to really reflect on ourselves and how we can become better people. To me, Ramadan means getting closer to my community and sharing my religion and practices to those around me. It also means a month of some really good food and desserts at the end of the night.
So talk a little bit about that. What exactly does it mean? So you're fasting for an entire month, but it's during... Talk a little bit about what it is.
So the Ramadan month is a full month. Every day we start fasting at sunrise, which typically today is like around 5:30-ish. And then we don't eat or drink until sunset, which is around 8 o'clock, and then we can eat afterwards. And we don't eat because we're trying to like feel how underprivileged people feel and be more grateful.
So beautiful. Maybe talk a little bit about what it's like at school when you're fasting each of those days, and maybe is it difficult to do that?
Fasting at school isn't really that difficult. I just appreciate that, like, a lot of my friends, like, know that I'm fasting and, like, understand, and my teachers too, and it's not really different from, like, fasting at home or anything. You just feel... You don't just have that much energy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Noor, why don't you tell me a little bit about your experience? Is it difficult to explain it to your friends that maybe don't have that same experience?
No, not really, because I'm really happy that they ask me questions, but it's not that difficult because I know that they're curious about it and they're interested in my religion, and I'm really happy that my teachers and friends acknowledge that I'm fasting and know that I can't eat or drink water.
Yeah, Nesha, tell me a little bit about your experience. Has it been different for you, or is it hard? Is it a good experience to talk to people, and what's their reaction when you explain things?
Well, for me, it's really not that hard. I mean, I have a few friends that are, like, really understanding. I have, like, one of my friends asks a lot of questions, and he knows, like, quite a bit about Islam and just fasting and all that in general. But it's really not that different from just a regular school day. The only thing that's different is lunch, and then sometimes, like, I have PE, and I get really thirsty then, but other than that, it's just the same. Mm.
Yeah, Huli, talk a little bit about how this experience with these students, what you're seeing, and maybe the growth and the ability to connect with their peers and how share these experiences.
So in Emerald Hills Institute, we are trying to help our kids to be proud of their own identity. So that's why, like, we are trying to encourage them, like, you know, first, they need to know all those rules. And second, they need to understand that diversity is very important for the community as well. And then they are not just like, you know, bribing, or they shouldn't be shy about it, because when they explain these rules, these topics to their friends, actually they are helping those people as well. So we are scared of the things that we don't know.
Yes.
And if we talk, and then if we get to know each other, so we are providing, we are making a better place for all of us. So that's the thing that we are trying to explain to our kids. And so the more years that I've been here, and then the more I realize that, like, our kids are happy to explain. They are not offended when someone asks them a question. So it's getting better and better for our kids.
Yeah, Zaina, talk to me about maybe, has there been any awkward talks when you have with friends? Is it hard for you to have those conversations, or have people been pretty open to having these kinds of conversations?
I surround myself with friends that are, like, more open and supportive. They're always, like, curious. Teachers are also, like, pretty neutral. They don't, like, support me directly, but I'm sure if I were to ask, they would. And I haven't personally been made fun of for fasting, but I just also get questions of why I fast, for how long, how is it, if it's difficult, or, you know, if you drink water or not.
Yeah.
And no, the answer is no. But there are, like, difficulties. I would say there are difficulties for me being a Muslim student attending a school where I'm, like, a minority. Okay. That can be a challenge to me. I've lived in three different states, one of them being Minnesota. And in Minnesota, I was surrounded by a larger Muslim community, so it made it easier for me to express myself. My school there provided Muslims their own room where they can leave class to pray, so we didn't need to worry about missing prayers. And
do you do that here or no?
I usually wait until I get home, so okay. I'm late to my prayers. But so, yeah, attending a school without the arrangements like that is a little hard, but also, like, helping educate the people around me about my religion and beliefs is something I enjoy doing. And it's the pro that comes with attending a school where not many people know about Islam. I get to represent my religion and be the example they think of whenever they think of a Muslim, and, you know, slowly break down the stereotypical images.
Yes. Yeah. No, I'm sure that's hard. You know, being from a minority religion myself, not in this state,
yeah,
but in the rest of the world, you know, there's been times where I've had to explain things that people find odd, mm-hmm. about my religion. And I think I'm just so impressed with your positive attitude about that. Have you found that people connect, because I feel myself connecting with you at this moment, that my religious observances are not so different. They may look a little different in practice, but I feel like there's so many similarities. Have you found that as you've explained things
I
to
have.
Your friends?
There have been instances where there are, like, more questions and stuff, and I'd explain them, and then I'd find, like, a lot of similarities, and that's really fun. Like, fasting, we fast, and then there's, like, the Christian religion, they also fast, so yeah. That's it's nice to
yeah, I think for me it's like I can relate to fasting.
Yeah.
I mean, we, you know, in the LDS faith, it's once a month, mm-hmm. instead of an entire month. So I feel, you know, it's the same purpose though, right? I mean, you're talking about these things and I'm totally relating. I'm talking about, you know, being grateful, giving to those that don't have you know, the food and things that we have so that somebody else can be blessed. I find a lot of connection, and I just think that's what's so beautiful about learning about people that have a different story than I do. So thank you for sharing. Zaina, now you're in elementary school, so I want to talk, it's unique, and sometimes kids, you know, to tell a story in a way that somebody will understand in fifth grade, how does that work for you? Are you finding people understanding?
I have a lot of classmates that, like, don't know what fasting or Ramadan or Islam really are, and so they just like ask me questions, like, really politely, and so I just usually, like, tell them, like, we fast because, like, we want to feel empathy for those who don't have much. And, like, I just really, like, try and explain it in, like, a way that they'll understand. And they're always usually really understanding. And, like, if I put it into, like, simple terms, they, like, get it and, like, they understand.
Yeah, I love that. That's so great. And I love that you've had a great reception of people sort of understanding where you're coming from. It does my heart good. I hope that, you know, Utahns are open and kind and you know, that everybody has a place to belong. That's what we want to feel here. I want to continue this conversation. We'll do that when we come right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back here on First Lady and Friends, and we're talking to our friends from Emerald Hills. The iftar dinner that we were invited to. This is such an interesting conversation. I think people are so curious. I think there's so many times where we've seen in the world and in our own communities when something seems different, it's automatically feared. You know, I think we've seen that in a lot of different places, not just religious organizations or religious traditions, but, you know, cultural traditions and, you know, just not knowing somebody's experience sometimes can be fearful. So I am so appreciative that you all are here to talk about, and you're so articulate and you're living such interesting experiences. And so I love that you're here to tell us about it. Nasha, talk a little bit more about, you know, your friends and the things that you're explaining to them.
Yeah. I mean, I get asked a lot of questions by, like, my friends, sometimes by my teachers, actually. I have, so right now I'm taking a class called AP Human Geography, where we study basically how different people act in different parts of the world, and just, like, interactions between countries and the environment and all that. And sometimes there'll be, like, something about Islam or something about, you know, how Ramadan affects the world. And sometimes he'll ask me, like, hey, Nishat, do you have anything to add on this? Do you relate to this? You know, is this accurate information?
Do you appreciate that, or is it uncomfortable to be singled out?
Not really, because I'm not super singled out. Because okay. If it's something else that someone else has a culture too, then he'll ask them too about that. It's not just like Nishat, what is this?
You know, that's great. Yeah, keep going.
And you know, a lot of people think like Utah itself is like just dominated by one culture, and everyone like is gonna start fighting you if you come in with just a different culture. But I found that, like, I mean, no one really cares. To the point, not like they're like, oh, no, I don't care that you're fasting, but it's like, it doesn't change their opinion of me. Mm. It's just, I mean, fasting doesn't change how you hang out, how you interact with other people. It's just, I'm not drinking water and eating, and they are.
Do you find... there is more diversity, so people are more used to that, sort of accepting different cultural backgrounds?
So I go to a school that has a larger, like, Muslim population than other schools, but it's not dominated, right? It's still a minority. But it's just, like, everyone, no matter which culture, accepts us. Like, I have a few friends that are that have lived in Utah their whole lives, and they haven't really seen everywhere, and they ask me a lot of questions about it, but they're still like inclusive, and they and like everyone's inclusive, and they aren't mean, or and they don't ask any like they don't say anything rude or anything like that.
That's great. Noor, talk a little bit about your experience as well.
At my school, thankfully we have like a room to go pray in, and the teacher are really lenient about like getting late to class when you're praying. And one thing I would really appreciate if like all Utah schools would allow it in their system is like an Eid day where we don't have like school. It's like going to school on Christmas. It's like kind of like that, except when you're Muslim at the end of Ramadan, you have like a celebration, which is Eid. And we normally sometimes, it depends on the day, we have a school day. And many students that are Muslim, they miss school for Eid because it's a celebration and you want to see your families and friends. And we get marked like absent for that, which doesn't really affect many people, but sometimes it can. But I think most of like Muslim students would really appreciate if we had just like a day off for our celebration.
Do you know who your state representative is? We should talk. Okay. We should figure out how we get this. We should talk about this. Okay. I think that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great idea for maybe some legislation or a policy change at our Utah State Board of Education. Mm-hmm. Let's work on this together, Noor. I like this.
Thank you.
One thing about it though is unlike like for example Christmas, Eid and like other Muslim like events, they follow the lunar calendar, which so it changes every year. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, that might cause a bit of like it's something unique.
Yeah, no, that's a great thought, and probably one we'd have to work through as we work through some kind of policy change. Right? I think that's so great. Julia, talk a little bit about how you see these students, and maybe is it different from your experience when you were new to the country, and maybe what you experienced in Turkey?
So when I came to Utah, this was 16 years ago. So people were like looking at me, especially kids. They were like, you know, looking at me with their eyes wide open, and then they're looking at it. And then I had some friends. They're like, ask like, do you have a head? Do you know, or are you bald? Or do you live with that hijab like the whole like 24 hours? Do you ever take it off? You know, we had those questions, but now like I feel like it's getting more and more. Like people are open and people are learning and people are more welcoming. So our kids, you know, it. So I have three kids. My oldest was born in Turkey, and then he came to Utah, and then the other two are born here. Were born here, and I feel like you know they are just getting to the environment. They are more, I would say, American. So because I am Turkish American, but they are more American, so they understand more and they are open to conversations more than us. Mm-hmm. So that just like gives me hope. Yeah. And then when they can just express their own culture, when they are able to talk to others, so that gives me hope. Not even for my kids, it just gives more like for the community.
Yeah. Zeynep, do you feel like you need to live in two different cultures? Do you feel like as a American, but also you have sort of, I mean, we're all Americans. Yeah. But I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is there conflict sometimes in navigating culture?
Yeah, there definitely is most of the time. It's like you have to, at school, you kind of have to act a certain way. And then at home, you have to, then you're like more cultural and all that. But, it all just comes down to how you can, like, put them both together. Mm-hmm. And slowly, like, over the years, I've found like a good balance between the two. And yeah, that's
been. Do you feel like you can, you found a balance, you feel like you can be true to who you are in both aspects?
Yes. I do still need some work on it, but I feel like I'm getting there.
Yeah, I can imagine that's, I mean, that's, it's difficult, I think, yeah. For all of us, and I'm sure you guys, I mean, we're all trying to find, you know, Julia, you talked about identity and them being proud of their identity. I think, you know, it's humans, we're all humans, we all want belonging and how important belonging is. Zeynep, how do you feel like, are you... feel like you belong, and you feel like there's belonging within your school, even though you may be part of a minority as you practice your culture and your religion?
Yeah, I feel like I definitely do belong, because since I've lived in America for so long, my entire life basically, I know, like, what my friends are always, like, talking about. I, like, get it because I've lived through those things with them. But I also think that, like, I belong because, like, my school is very diverse. And so I also have that belonging of, like, I'm also from, like, a different culture.
Yeah, that's so great. I think we can find belonging in a lot of different ways. Noor, talk about your experience of belonging as well.
Yeah, sure. My school is pretty diverse, so there are a lot of Muslims and a lot of people from other different cultures. And I'm pretty used to that because I was born here. And I do see, like, different cultures and different, like, people asking me questions when they see, like, a hijab on my head, or, like, if they see me, like fasting and not eating. And I like that they ask questions, and I feel like that it makes me assure that people know that I'm from a different culture, and it makes me happy that they ask me questions because it makes me feel like I do belong.
That's perfect. Neshe, talk about, you're in high school, you're navigating a few different things too. How difficult is it to sort of stay true to who you are, but also experiencing the culture that you live in here in Utah and in the USA?
You know, for me, it's actually kind of the opposite of what people think it is. Mm. So I was born here in Utah and I grew up here and I've lived here all my life. And a lot of people think that, like, I may have a hard time fitting in with the people around me, like, in America, but it's actually kind of the opposite. So I found that, like, I struggle with keeping my connection to my original culture in Turkey. Mm. And like I'm bilingual, I speak English and Turkish, but it's kind of weird because however much I try to improve my English with, like, how, because I go to school and I learn English there, it's kind of like my Turkish deteriorates. So, and I have a few Turkish friends who have, like, lived in Turkey half their lives and they came here. And it's kind of, like, hard fitting in with them because they have come from a different background than what I have.
That's fascinating. And I think that's really an interesting dynamic. I'm so glad that you brought that up. I think I hear that, you know, from people that I meet that sort of straddle two different cultures. And it's interesting that there's a dominant culture that maybe, you know, your original culture is not... You're not feeling as much belonging there. That's really fascinating. Yeah, Julia, do you have?
I think I experience more challenge when I with American culture because I was born in Turkey and then my roots are there and then I grew up in Turkey. I grew up with this culture and I'm getting used to American culture. But my kids, as I said, they're trying to get used to, like, Turkish culture, yeah. Connect with that culture because they're away.
Do you find, as a mother, are you struggling with watching them be more comfortable in a culture that was not your original culture? Is that, there's got to be some kind of conflict there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. There is a conflict. And we are trying to understand, for example, at first we came here like the Halloween was kind of. You
know? Well, it's weird for everyone, frankly. It's not my.
Yeah, I mean, like, so for example, this is totally personal.
Yes. Okay. Yes,
this is not, this is Julia's opinion. Okay. Yes. It's not
I probably share it, so go ahead.
So I'm like, I love Christmas. I love Christmas. Yes. I love Thanksgiving. I love Easter because I understand the idea behind this.
Yeah.
But personally, I'm still struggling with Halloween because, like, you know, it is so, and I'm so scared of spiders, and spiders are everywhere. It is such a hard thing for me, but for my kids, they're like, it is a celebration, it's a fun time, you know, and they're looking awkward to me, and then they're saying, Mom, you should enjoy this. I'm like, there's no way that I can enjoy it.
Well, I have to tell you, I commiserate with you because I actually, even though, you know, again, I've been surrounded by this my whole life. But I hate Halloween. There it is. That'll probably get canceled for that. But that is not my favorite. I do not enjoy Halloween. I love to watch people dress up. I don't like to dress up. I don't like the creepy, weird stuff. And so, yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah, I understand the dress up, the costumes. But, like, you know, when we are celebrating something, to me, like, again, this is my opinion, to me it should be something for good.
Yeah.
Not scaring people, you know.
I'm with you. Yeah. I'm with you. What do you feel? Are you into it?
It's Halloween is just nice to, like, dress up with friends. But other than that, it's, like, whatever. But I wasn't born in the U.S., okay. So I kind of was...
Where were you born?
I was born in Jordan.
Okay.
And I moved around when I was 5. I remember some things, not everything, because I was little. But I have both aspects where it's, like, I understand my, like, norms. Like, when I moved here, I had, like, already, like, whatever my normal, like... stuff I would do in Jordan, and then when I come here, it's like the culture shock.
Yeah.
But like when I would be talking to my mom and I'm like, oh, like, can I go to, like, for example, prom's coming up.
Yes.
That was a big one where I'm like, can I please go to prom with my friends? And she'd be like, you know, what's the point? It's a dance. Like, it's, why would you need to do that? And I get her, like, side of it, because I'm also like, I share it, but also I have my opinion, like, that I want to go, you know? Yep. So it's like two different cultures clashing together, and I get both of them, but yeah.
God, that's so interesting. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think that's what we don't always understand, is that when you're living in a home where you've pretty much fully immersed in this culture, but you have parents...
Yeah.
That haven't. Or at least, you know, to some extent, they have more of a pull.
Yeah.
To the original culture.
Mm-hmm. And then I definitely, like, share their beliefs, and I also, like, support it. But it's like, I'm kind of, like, mixed in between both. So I'm trying to find the middle ground.
Yeah, that's really hard to do. I love your honesty. Seriously, yeah. you guys are the best. I'm just trying to figure out, like, that is so interesting to me, because I have, you know, I have a 16-year-old that's talking about these things, but she doesn't have that added, mm-hmm. you know, I'm trying to figure out, like, who she's going with and all this, you know, crazy stuff. But yeah, so interesting. Well, I love this conversation, and we'll finish up when we come right back. We're back here on First Lady and Friends with our friends at Emerald Hills Institute. This has been so enjoyable for me, and probably most enjoyable was our off mic conversation with Zaina's mom. Just for the record, she wants me to tell you that she is going to prom, right, Zaina? So tell me, talk a little bit about that conversation.
So it's been on and off for a couple months. Okay. Where it's like, you're going, you're not, you're going, you're not. And then I finally got her to say yes. And, you know, dress shopping was the difficult part. So
yeah, talk about that. So, because I mean, again, I come from a background where modesty and it's the different. There's different variations in cultural appropriate modesty and whatever that looks like, and so I understand the mm-hmm. difficulty of finding.
Yeah, so clothing. Like just looking through a bunch of dresses, you know, there's always like an issue. There's
one,
like it could look really nice, but then you look at the back and it's
exactly.
like the whole back's out, and I can't do that. And yeah, same like length and all that. But at the end, we like found this really nice dress, and we're just gonna like tailor it a little bit, and
you
then we're good
to fix it.
But she always used the excuse as, "Oh, the dresses aren't even that good, so you shouldn't even go to prom." But I got her to say yes, so this Saturday.
Yay! Finally. Oh, that's so fun. I'm so excited about that. During this conversation, I have to say that, and Julia, you can probably relate to this too. I have three sons as well. So I think, and Zaina's mom, we're talking, and parenting is universal. Everywhere I go, and I've been to a few places around the world, and there's not one place that I have been that I couldn't have a parenting conversation with somebody that's a parent, a fellow parent. And it doesn't matter language, it doesn't matter culture, it doesn't matter, you know, human parents all have the same struggles. Yeah, talk a little bit about your parenting experience.
There is an old video. There's a mom. She summarized what moms say in a minute, and then she made a song from that. And then all those little things, they are exactly the same in Turkish language and in English, exactly from word to word. If your friends jump off a hill, would you jump too? Or get off the phone, answer the phone. You know, all everything, eat quickly, but chew slowly. You know, everything exactly the same, even if you translate like word by word. That means like, I think there is a parenting language. And we all share the same yes. experience, same challenge, totally. But, from my perspective, we have like one more layer on top of that. It's the cultural difference. Yep. You know, my kids, sometimes they say like, oh, you Turkish people, you know. You know, they just say that too. But we are trying to find the balance. For
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. Nesha, what's your experience with your parents?
It's different.
Since yours just spoke.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll say like, oh, me and my friends are going to do something. And then like, well, why didn't you do this instead? Why are you doing that? Like, what's the point? I don't get it. Like, can I go to their house so we can go work on a project? And they're like, why aren't they coming here?
Do I know them? Have I met them? Do I know them?
Yeah, exactly.
I know that language.
And I don't know. It's definitely different, but my mom is understanding, and like my parents try to understand and change for the culture here.
I love that. Yeah, Noor, talk a little bit about your experience with your parents.
So mine is just like mostly with grades and their experience with like school and things like that. Like they tell me about like how back home.
And remind me where your parents were.
My parents are from Azerbaijan, which is a country like close to Turkey. And they talk about how like parent-teacher conferences where in Azerbaijan, families, like the students, mother and father and teacher, all of them, they're all in one single room, and the teacher calls every student out and says, like, okay, for example, Noor's mom and dad, she tells Noor is like a good student or like a bad student, but she says, my mom and dad say here in America, everyone's perfect. So like even if you have like a B, which is probably the end of the world for my parents. It's a bad grade, and if you have an A minus, it's a bad grade. And so, like, sometimes, like, they know better, but sometimes I try to, like, tell them to be a little bit more lenient and things like that, but my parents are like, no, A plus or nothing.
I love that, yeah. Zaina.
My parents, they just want me to get good grades. They don't care about grades, like, too much because they know that I work hard. My parents' issues are usually when I, like, try and, like, go places. Mm-hmm. Before, like, 2020, before, like, the whole COVID thing, my parents, I maybe went over to a friend's house, like, maybe once a year. My parents really didn't let me go anywhere, but after that, like, my mom like started feeling sorry for me because I was online. Mm-hmm. And so she started like letting me go to places more. She started like making the effort to like get my friend's mom's phone numbers, and so now like if my mom has their phone number and she knows them, she'll really let me go anywhere.
Mm. So you know, that's interesting, Zaynep, because I've actually kind of had the same experience as your parents and your mom with my daughter who's 16. During the pandemic, you know, they were apart, and we realized how damaging it is to not have those social interactions. I was, you know, I've talked many times on this on the podcast about, you know, the study that shows that there are 15 college freshmen are entering with 15,000 fewer social interactions. So that's 3 years of social interactions that we were lacking. So I do the same thing as your mom. I am like, you want to go with friends? Yes. Okay, let's do it. Let's, you know, the less you're on your phone, the less you're online, the better you're going to be. So let's have prom. Let's do things. Let's go. It's probably a little too much. I probably need to like balance that somewhere, but I'm having that same experience as you are. I just want to just say thank you to all of you for sharing your stories. I know it's not always easy to share your experiences. We're better because of you. We're better as a state because of the diversity that you bring, because of the diversity of experience, of your your personalities, your culture. I would so appreciate the time you've been able to spend with us, and we're excited. We'll connect you with Show Up. We'll get you. I know you all. Before we end, maybe just each of you tell a little bit about your favorite service project that you've been involved in, because I know the Emerald Hills Institute is all about service. You're connecting youth with service. And what we have found out, there's so much research around mental health, good mental health, and serving and volunteering. And it's connected at a high level. And so we are all about making sure our mental health is good. So maybe just we'll start with you, Nishit.
Okay. I don't know. I've gone a lot of places, but I think my favorite thing was, me and a few of my friends, we came together and we prepared like packs of just necessities, like toothbrush, toothpaste. That's later. No, the first time we did it, we made a bunch of food, mm-hmm. and we put it into packs, and we got like forks, spoons, stuff like that. And then we went here in downtown Salt Lake City, and we went around and we passed it out to homeless people, mm-hmm. and you know, we asked them for like their stories, and there was this one old man. I don't remember because it was before COVID, so I don't remember everything. But he was just telling us his whole life story, and we just sat down with him, mm-hmm. And we were eating, and he was eating, and we were just talking about, you know, his life, his story.
Wow, that's neat. Noor?
There has been like a couple of times, but I think my favorite is I do judo, and it's pretty fun because I'm also pretty successful in it, and the Emerald Hills Institute has like this little center for like I'm pretty sure like grades from K through 4 or 5, and they invited me to like teach judo and like help some kids like be a little active, because like pretty much nowadays everyone's like stuck on their phone and devices, and I just like went in there and I like did some stretches and I like helped them with throws and things like that, and it was pretty fun.
That's amazing. Yes, please.
She's actually the judo champion for like 3 years in a row.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and she presented United States in like international competitions.
Wow, that's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Since I'm still like pretty young, I'm in elementary school. I don't do that many like service projects, but what Nisha was talking about, where I was included in that, we just like got a bunch of like necessities, like floss, like toothpaste, toothbrushes, combs, and like those kind of things, and like put them into packs, and then we went to this like organization which like helps homeless people, and we like distributed it all.
That's amazing. Yeah.
My favorite was, I think it was about 2 years ago, I got to like build it from scratch with a few friends of mine. It was during Black History Month, and we were trying to like include Black History Month in like service, and so I got to meet with like a black owned business, and we partnered up with them, and they provided us with food, and we brought them up on social media, and we got the food that they gave us, and we went downtown and distributed it to the homeless. Wow. So that was pretty fun.
That's amazing.
And leadership skills, I built that up from there.
Ah, love that. Yeah.
Julia, talk a little bit about the kids and doing the service projects.
We have a group of students starting age 14. They are working on their Congressional Award. And so they need to collect 400 hours of volunteering to earn the gold medal. And so we are organizing some events, such as like a gathering, like hygiene packets or food for like homeless shelters. Actually, we're going to have another one this Saturday. And then so our youth helps to cook the food and prepare it and then distribute it. That's one project. Other project is like, for example, for Black History Month, connecting with like Black-owned companies and then, help them, support them, and at the same time support the shelters. And so the biggest part that they are helping is actually mentoring. So, for example, our high school students are helping like middle school kids or elementary kids. We have like Saturday school, and our students, like high schoolers, they actually volunteer there and then become like, brothers, like older brothers. And then they are help tutor them, help them with like some projects. Or, for example, we had an art project. They made piñata and their stuff. So they tutor at the same time. And our college students, they are helping our like high school students on ACT or, organizing the volunteering events, etc.
That's amazing. I'm always amazed at the work I wasn't aware of. The more I learn about the amazing projects and organizations that are doing great work in the state, I'm just so impressed with you. And it starts, and hopefully because you're all Utahns, that this is in our DNA. We're always the number one volunteering state. We're always the number one in charitable giving, and you're making sure that continues. So
is it okay if I have one more thing?
Oh, please, Noor.
My coach, Sensei Adam, he isn't Muslim, but he's also involved with like helping the helping with the poor and giving away charity. There's this one organization called Fill the Pot. I'm pretty sure it's like in downtown. And every day for 10 years straight, every Sunday for 10 years straight, he goes to that organization and feeds like the homeless and the poor. And I feel like I could connect with that because I've done those things before. And yeah.
I love that. Thank you. Again, we have just incredible people in the state that are doing work that lots of times goes unnoticed, but it really is making this our state better, and we're so appreciative of your organization. And thank you all for being here with me today and sharing your stories. Thank you.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on kslpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.